Hello, and welcome to recording number 7 of Gary Gygax's Artifact of Evil, an annotated recording. Today is August 2nd, 2021. So we're going to take up where we left off, but the little background is that the small band has made its way through the Sus Forest, reunited with Curly Greenleaf, who disappeared unbeknownst to me somewhere while they were still in the Sus, and made his way and came back, and I believe now they're in Badwall. And in Badwall, they are waiting for some guides being supplied by the Circle of Eight. And since they haven't arrived yet, they're seeing if they can find a local guide. And a man named Blanc, a mercenary, has approached them. So he's gone off, and they're discussing him. So that's where I'm going to pick up. It is page 60, and the fourth paragraph. "What think you?" Curly asked Geller. "Fortuitous for us, he should be here and volunteer. Perhaps too fortuitous," the one-eyed adventurer replied. "He is not as fine a swordsman as I," Jacote said. "But he has steel to him, which tells me he is a tough adversary worthy of the contest." Still discussing the pros and cons of accepting Blanc into their party, should the need arise, they trooped out of the inn to go on their various errands. Many small details needed to be taken care of before they departed the walled town for their dangerous quest into the fastness of the wild Sus Forest. It took only a little time for Gord to feel something wrong. Eyes were watching him. Having put many a prospective mark under surveillance himself, the young thief instinctively knew when others were marking him. Gord had separated from the others, intending to look for a few things particular to his own wants. The marketplace in Badwall was strung out along three axes that met in the open square. His watchers had certainly picked him up at the plaza and followed him to his present location along one of the side streets. All right, break. So here we have, they're briefly discussing Blanc. They do notice that it may be overly fortuitous for him to have shown up. But then one of the themes that we have gone through in Saga of Old City, and now again in Artifact of Evil, is deception and discernment, where there is something that Gord and others of experience are able to sense various things or see through disguises and plots. And it's been a continuous theme going out through the books. One of the reasons is this is a novel from Gord's point of view, for the most part, a thief's point of view, and Gygax really thought of thieving as including a lot of, even more than, say, like burglary, cat burglary kind of thing. He thought a lot of thieving would be con games and disguises, and in that respect, the people who are experienced in it are able to spot when that is happening, and it's happened again and again for Gord. He is spotted sometimes, but most of the time he's the one who sees through, and as it says here, as someone who is, as a character who is watching other people, he has picked up an instinctive ability to sense when other people are watching him.
I really love that part. Like he felt the eyes on him. I've loved playing thieves, and this is like really, really good stuff.
And I think, I'm not big on weighing down things with mechanics, but I really think that should be part of the makeup of the thief character. There's so many different characteristics that are listed, that ability, I think it's something that should be particular to the thief character, where he can notice when he's being watched. And I think I would add it to the mechanical abilities of in the game for a thief. You know, they can hide in shadows, but they're also able to notice when they're being watched. And I would probably include that with the assassin and the monk, where all of them are. Now, we were talking this morning on the regular chat, and one of the people brought up that subject up, and he was calling awareness rather than discernment. And in this case, I think this falls under awareness. There isn't a disguise or a con game or a hidden thing. It instead, he's aware of his surroundings, and instinctively he is picking up through that awareness seeing when others are watching him.
Yeah, it makes sense. If people are casting furtive glances, I mean, there should be a percentage chance that he might notice that.
And since he does the same thing, then he can notice maybe even among a crowd what people's, how somebody who is used to following other people can learn when they're being followed. They gain that sense. And, you can say it's not a magical thing. It may just be an ability to detect the actions of somebody watching him and, actively watching rather than, he can spot the movement of a curtain. He can spot somebody who's, whose head is directed at them, get the sense that there are the focus of attention.
So dwarves and elves can notice the incline in a dungeon or trap doors like Evely did. Thieves might have a chance to detect if they're being spied upon.
Yeah. Now, I really, I would say that is something for DMs to think about adding to the abilities. I talk a lot about how I like the aspect of skills being a role-playing game. It's rather than you fill out so many numbers, you get so many skills per non-weapon skills and such. I prefer it as something that is role-playing. But in this case, I think I would limit this awareness more toward an actual trained ability where you have to, you don't just pick it up like you learn to ride a horse. I think this awareness is, if you're going to use classes and have a thief and a fighter, then I would, if there are special abilities in your game, I would add this as a learned special ability to detect when you're being watched, when you're being followed.
There's also, and we use it as, there's an observation proficiency in one of the second edition handbooks, and it's in an off one. I don't think it's in the Thief or Fighter's handbook. I think it's in, the Humanoids one for some reason. But, yeah, we use that.
All right. So, yeah, and it's, one of the things I'm unfamiliar with. So, yeah, that is, I'll have to check that out because that, I think, is a valuable thing to add. And Gygax is trying to keep this book in line with AD&D rules, but it's not necessarily just the rules. He liked using things from Unearthed Arcana, from expansions, from Dragon magazine articles. And Gord himself is not a normal thief. He is now an acrobat thief, which was a class that was written up in Dragon magazine. So, certain classes like Chert, who has not appeared yet, he is a barbarian. So his character class is, not from the player's handbook. It's from Unearthed Arcana. And then, we were talked about the Cavalier. And the Cavalier is another expansion class. So it's possible that Gygax is actually talking about that observation and awareness at this point, but maybe for notes for future expansions, which got dropped into second edition.
I just verified inside the Humanoids Handbook, there is new proficiencies, you know, of the second edition of rule set. And it's they have observation and also one called danger sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would, instead of having that available to anyone, limit it to the classes that are like based under thief. You could see how that would be learned by assassins. And I would say, you know, also monks, since they get this, you know, quick reaction, general sense of more, you know, like they're paying, part of the monk class I see is paying attention to everything around you. And, you know, that I think would be a nice ability that you get without using it as a skill system. But I do like that quite a bit. And I think that this is something Gygax may have been talking about here rather than just using it as part of the story. You know, is that's just merely something thrown in. Because most of the time when there's something important, it is covered in the AD&D rules from these books. All right, so we also, what did I want to say here? We also get a little physical description of Badwall. So we know there's a market plaza, and there's, according to Gygax, and that there are three side streets where the market is, you know, where the market expands. So if you're thinking about fleshing out Badwall, what do we have? Well, we have the Brass Ball Inn, and we now have some description of the market. Very minimal stuff, but I, you know, we go through these books and we add bit by bit by bit, and we flesh things out, and then whatever is left over, we have to do ourselves. So I don't think there's very much about Badwall normally detailed, so here we are picking up a few things. We get the idea of how, like, if I were a player and I had somebody like Blanc come up, then I would do exactly what they're showing here, is have a private discussion over the character. Now, you know, I think most players would do that anyway, but if you're, you know, an inexperienced player, that would certainly be something to bring up. Yeah, and Badwall is a hard-bitten frontier town. And it is, imagine how bad the sus is supposed to be. And all of this is within very easy reach of the sus forest. So, Badwall, yeah, kind of like Tombstone, Arizona, maybe. But definitely.
Back to that Star Trek episode.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You know, that it is kind of like that. You know, most of this stuff is like that episode of the original series Star Trek, where they're in Tombstone and everything is just bits and pieces, instead of full buildings with clouds, like grayish clouds all around them instead of walls and such. And yeah, you know, Gygax tells us certain bits and pieces, but then we have to do the walls and we have to put the roof on and say what the, you know, the building looks like. And so we get little bits and pieces, and you know, from there we go on to build our form of the city. And we're picking up little things here about Badwall. All right, I am going to restart. It is page 61, paragraph 2. Gord tarried, peering into windows, spending time inside shops, and generally doing nothing that a casually browsing shopper would not have done. Meanwhile, he tried to discover the identity of those who were observing him. No success. Whoever they were skilled at their art. After spending about an hour at this game, Gord decided to return to the square and rendezvous with his associates. By doing this, he finally managed to discover that there were two, possibly three men following him. One was ahead now, so that meant that another was somewhere behind him. Another inconspicuous figure moved back and forth across the narrow street, occasionally coming quite near to Gord. Because he had not done so before, Gord supposed that his followers were coming overconfident and careless, playing a game among themselves for their private amusement. The young thief decided that he would do his best to make them regret it. Evening shadows were falling across the small plaza, and stalls and carts were closing. Inkosi, Moon, and Patrick had just joined Geller and Jacote. The latter pair were munching on some confection, purchased from a just-closed booth, washing the honey and nut cake down with a crock of wine, which the Chakyuk never seemed to be without. Where Curly and his satellites were, Gord didn't know, but he hoped that they'd arrive soon. The young thief wished to inform his friends of the situation quickly, so that they could be prepared. Break. So I wonder which one of. Oh, all right.
You went out for a minute. You're back now.
All right. Can anyone remember where I you lost my voice? Mm-hmm. Was I commenting or did I restart the story?
You had just restarted the story, I think.
All right. I haven't really gotten that far, so I'm just going to restart there. Please type to me or speak up if you, this is a very informal recording, and if you lose my voice, if you could try to immediately jot down the time on the text, and we'll be able to maybe cut short the missing sections. All right, so sorry about that. Here we go, and it's a couple paragraph. I will go and restart page 61, paragraph 2. Gord tarried, peering into windows, spending time inside shops, and generally doing nothing that a casual browsing shopper would not have done. Meanwhile, he tried to discover the identity of those who were observing him. No success. Whoever they were skilled at their art. After spending about an hour at this game, Gord decided to return to the square and rendezvous with his associates. By doing this, he finally managed to discover that there were two, possibly three, men following him. One was ahead now, so that meant that another was somewhere behind him. Another inconspicuous figure moved back and forth across the narrow street, occasionally coming quite near to Gord. Because he had not done so before, Gord supposed that his followers were becoming overconfident and careless, playing a game among themselves for their private amusement. The young thief decided that he would do his best to make them regret it. Evening shadows were falling across the small plaza, and stalls and carts were closing. Inkosi, Moon, and Patrick had just joined Geller and Jacote. The latter pair were munching on some confection purchased from a just-closed booth, washing the honey and nut cake down with a crock of wine, which the Chakyuk never seemed to be without. Where Curly and his satellites were, Gord didn't know, but he hoped that they'd arrive soon. The young thief wished to inform his friends of the situation quickly, so that they could be prepared for whatever might happen. And Gord was beginning to feel that something was going to transpire soon. He nonchalantly waved to his comrades as he strolled near. There was no doubt in his mind that Geller had caught the flickering of his fingers and the set of his motion, signals that demanded immediate attention and conveyed warning. Break. All right, first off, Chris has provided us with a little description of danger sense. And again, you know, this is taken from the Humanoids book, and I would instead change this to something available to thief characters or rogue characters, depending on the edition you're playing. But definitely first edition thieves, monks, and assassins. I kind of feel that this should be part of their gained abilities through character class.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that that is probably what Gygax is developing right here, because he normally, like I said, doesn't just throw things in because it's good for the story. He normally throws things in because it is, you know, something he's working on or has just been developed for the AD&D system. All right, so this section right here, I wanted to stop. Immediately at the end of that last paragraph, I wondered what kind is he using the merchant talk. I know there's the thieves' cant, and I assume there's signaling as well. And both Geller and Geller as a bard, and a one who imitated, you know, who pretended being a thief in Stoink.
He would know thieves' cant for sure.
And then back in Song of Old City, the merchants also had a signal, and so did the beggars. And but anyway, I'd suspect that this is kind of thieves signaling language that, you know, will alert Geller. But it could also be that merchant's language that caught Gord when he was just a 12-year-old and stealing in the foreign quarter, in the Petit Bazaar. And Gord thought he had gotten away with this theft, but what the merchant had done was signaled silently to the watch, and the watch caught Gord. So here I think it's either the merchants or the thieves talk. Now we have, you know, some little idea here about the makeup of the marketplace. It closes in the evening, or at least you know, a good some sections of it do. The carts do. There may be more to the market that doesn't, but like you could see where the market might be open late at night for Greyhawk, but where a smaller town, there wouldn't be enough business and it would close up, or there may even be laws that say in Badwall the market closes at sunset. Here we have that little bit of information. If you're noting down things for Badwall, here's a little more that you can use to flesh it out. The business with the thieves having one person ahead, one behind, and one close by is probably taken from, books that Gygax has read about spies and, the best way to follow somebody is to have somebody not only behind, but somebody ahead. That the person isn't able to run away. So that, you know, I assume that Gygax probably picked that up from, you know, a book or, some kind of popular spy show. All right. I'm a little, you know, I'm not too sure how honey and nut cake would go with wine, but there's a little something for Badwall that... the confectioner booth.
Yes, it would depend on the kind of wine.
I guess I'm not an alcohol drinker, so it all kind of tastes like pretty bad for me too. All right. I am going to restart right here. I think. Before I do there, I think there's one risk that the people who are following Gord. Do know the signaling language that's being used, unless it is something special developed, and I don't see when that would happen. All right, I'm going to restart. It's page 61, final paragraph. Successful shopping, Gord, the one-eyed bard asked, but as he said this, his own hands were carefully querying Gord as to his concern. No one not in the group around him would have noticed such a signal, Not even a skilled thief or a René Montebach. Nothing doing, the young thief replied. Where is Greenleaf and his trio of apprentice druids? Ward flashed a warning that he was trailed by two or three experienced men as he casually conversed in vocal fashion. Geller tilted his head toward the town gate nearby. Curly and his three associates went off about half an hour ago to find some herb or other. They're to meet us at the inn. Let's off. The one-eyed adventurer matched action to word, striding purposely for the brass bell. All right, breaking right here. Again, collecting bad wall information. So, the market square is close to the main gate, the town gate. So whether it's the main gate or whether Badwall has many gates or even, several, here is some information that you can get to the market, and it's said that the town gate is nearby. So that's a little point to pick up about Badwall. All right, I am going to restart. It is page 62 and paragraph 4. Gord understood this without benefit of any additional communication. If Curly and his inexperienced apprentices were caught somewhere outside the town by determined attackers, they could be in trouble. Jacote and Kosi and the two fighters hadn't noticed anything out of the ordinary during the whole of the exchange between thief and bard, so the four simply followed after Geller and Gord, assuming that their comrades were anxious to find the rest of their party and set plans for tomorrow's leave-taking. The group quickly covered the short distance to the place where the large, tarnished globe of brass marked their inn. Geller was leading them on past the brass ball toward the gate, certainly planning to seek the druid wherever they might be beyond the portal, when the husky half-elf and his trailing novices appeared, passing through the heavy gates and heading toward the inn. All right, break. So now we have, Chris has put up the business about observation, and it's, again, a proficiency. I'm not quite sure, maybe... the way they describe danger, sense, and observation, I think that they're trying to make it more available for anyone rather than just thieves. But the kind of observation and danger sense and awareness that Gord is practicing, that seems particular to thieves. And it's something it could be added to your list of things to add as a skill list, like they have here, or as learn through role playing, or like I want to do with it, add it to the abilities of a thief, monk, or assassin. All right, so again, I'm stopping because right here we have Geller and his apprentices are coming through the town gate, which is close to the market. And they are within sight of the brass bell. And so we have then that the brass bell is close to both the main gate and the market. And we've learned earlier that the brass bell is on the western side of Badwall. So again, we're kind of constructing this bit-by-bit map. Now, we also get a little bit of a description that there is a actual brass sphere, a large tarnished globe of brass that marks their inn. We don't know how it is set. It could be hanging like a sign. It could be set on something. But it definitely is the signpost is the brass, the actual brass sphere. There we have a little bit more about the brass ball inn. Okay. I'm going to restart. It is page 62 and the second paragraph from the end. Greenleaf waved cheerily, and his friends stood waiting for the four druids to join them outside the hostel. While Patrick and Moon were discussing something quietly between themselves, and Inkosi was likewise engaged in idle banter with Jacote, Gord was alertly scanning the area for those men who had watched and followed him, and Geller's posture and movements indicated that he too was on the lookout for trouble. It came almost immediately. "Watch yourself, damned churls." This was spat disdainfully from a well-dressed horseman exiting the stable yard of the inn. He had nearly ridden down Inkosi, and as he cursed the dark warrior, he kicked his booted foot at the Chakyuk next in line. There were five or six other horsemen behind the first, all coming at a trot now and drawing their swords. "Silly shit," Jacote said indifferently, levering the man from his mount by the means of his own extended foot. The fellow crashed heavily to the paved roadway, stunned but still trying to unsheath his longsword. All right, I'm going to break right here. Yeah, you know, Moon is kind of, if you know the Moorcock stories, is, you know, Chris thinks of Moonglum right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, just conjures that for me.
And, you know, it's, although, I'm not sure, was Moonglum just, he was something like just a mercenary fighter.
Yeah.
He's an
eternal champion.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
He was one of the incarnations of the Eternal Champion.
Oh, really? I thought that he was a companion.
He was a friend and a companion of Elric's, too.
All right. Okay. All right, now, in this section, we get a little bit more about Bad Wall. The roadways, at least in this area, are paved. And the inn has a stable yard attached to it. Not surprising, but just every little bit of information. We have little Jacote's little ability here to, you know, dismount. Now, who would be better at knowing how to dismount someone than a tiger nomad, you know, a horse nomad, who's going to know full well what to do if he wants to throw someone from a horse. All right, and, you know, as the storyline goes, we have this, you know, set where, in Bad Wall, they're already encountering probably agents or members of the Scarlet Brotherhood. But we'll see. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 63. Paragraph 2. Gord and the rest scattered as the riders came up, blades flashing, trying their best to trample and hack the men before them. One managed to ride his own comrade down, just as the falling man was regaining his feet. had his sword in hand. A horse flailed its hooves at Gord as its rider reined it back hard, slashing and wounding the Chakyuk barbarian who had so rudely unseated his attacker. Gord ducked under the animal before him, thumping its belly with a balled fist as he did so, then rolling and tumbling clear. The pain caused the horse to come down stiff leg and buck, its rear hooves lashed out and caught another of the mounted men on the leg. That rider yelled in agony and lost control of his mount, and soon all of the riders were milling in a confused knot, trying to regroup and resume their attack. "These knaves need punishing," one called, still keeping up the obvious pretense of offended gentlemen at odds with surly common adventurers. "You are master," cried a loud voice from the group of bystanders who had appeared as if by magic to view the melee. Gord was virtually out of the confused scene by then, not even having drawn sword or dagger. He saw that there were a dozen or more armed men in the crowd, one he immediately recognized as being among the men who followed him earlier. The whole affair was certainly well planned and orchestrated, even though the initial rush of horsemen had not had the effect that had been hoped for. More ruffian types were congregating around Curly Greenleaf and his apprentices, while a larger force was intent on dealing with Geller and the rest. The footmen, claiming to be the servants and retainers of their associates on horseback, had produced weapons and were menacing the five adventurers, while the mounted attackers were readying to come at them from the other side. Geller, Jacote, and Cosi Moon and Patrick had no place to go, caught as they were in the open area between the two forces. Neither group of foemen had yet noticed that there was one member missing from the party they were besetting. Blades began to meet in ringing strikes. Gord had no time to worry about what was happening to Curly and his associates, realizing that unless he came to the aid of his five trapped friends, they would be in serious jeopardy. The opportunity was perfect, for Gord could fall upon the attackers from their rear and take them unawares, intent only on their supposed victims. He went into action immediately, striking low with a broad sweep of his short sword, cutting the backs of the legs of two of the attackers, while plunging his long dagger into the unsuspecting back of a fellow about to smash Moon's head with his upraised morning star. Just as he withdrew the poignard and dealt a finishing stroke with his sword, nearly severing the foeman's head with the blow, Gord saw the mercenary Block suddenly leap in among the horsemen, his longish spear playing havoc with the men and horses alike, stabbing with one end, clubbing with shaft and butt as if it were a quarterstaff. The raw-boned fighter laid about him with a ferocity that momentarily impressed even as seasoned a combatant as Gord. The riders were confused, scattered by the attack, one crushed beneath his fallen stallion, another dripping blood from a long gash inflicted by the keen blade of the spear, a third trying to halt his stampeding mount, and the other two reeling atop panicked and bucking steeds. Gord blocked a cut from a broad-bladed sword and reposited with a long lunge that skewered his adversary through the chest. Geller and Akosi were fighting back now with confidence, not having to worry about their backs for the moment. Patrick and the Bleeding Moon held one flank, while Jacote was actually single-handedly driving a bunch of attackers backwards on the other. Geller was engaged with a pair of hard-bitten opponents who were pressing him severely. Gord wounded one of the pair so as to distract him sufficiently for his one-eyed friend to finish the deed and concentrate on the remaining opponent. Of the original gang of ruffians who had beset them, at least half a dozen were dead, as many sorely wounded, and most of the others bloodied to some extent. Being what they were, they broke and ran. Several more of the thugs died in the process, but the remainder made good their escape, leaving their dead and wounded to whatever fate befell them. The horsemen had fared little better, although their quality was certainly superior to that of their so-called henchmen. Gord noted that somehow the doughty Blanc had managed not only to remain alive, but was still carrying the fight to his mounted adversaries. Of the seven who had begun the fray, four still sat atop their steeds and fought, but it was nearly impossible. But the lone footman, armed only with his spear and incredible courage, kept them at bay and managed to occasionally deliver a solid attack upon one or another of the riders as well. Geller ignored the whole, running past to see to the safety of the druids, for they were still engaged in melee with the ruffians who had attacked them. Gord sprang high, landing on the rump of a startled horse, feet first. Before the animal could react, the young thief had cut its rider's shoulder with a sure sword stroke and vaulted to a similar position atop the next horse. With a scything stroke of his dagger, he took its rider out of combat, the narrow blade penetrating the exposed place under the man's armpit and killing him. As the horse whinnied and reared, Gord was off and striking the withers of yet another of the animals, using the flat of his sword to send the horse into panic. "Thanks, comrade," the spear-wielding mercenary said as he tugged the weapon free from where the horseman had impaled himself on the heavy bladed shaft as he fell from the bucking gelding. "That does for the lot." The lone survivor of the seven mounted attackers had indeed spurred for parts unknown. Gord didn't waste time in conversation. This way he called to Blanc as he ran to the place Geller and the rest now battled. There was no further work for his red-stained blades, however, or for the deadly spear that the mercenary plied. By the time the two men came to reinforce the rest, the few remaining attackers had dropped their weapons and were begging for quarter. At about the same time, a large squad of the city watch arrived, crossbows cocked and at the ready. "Lay down your arms and cease fighting," the order was given somewhat uncertainly by the captain of the group of city guards, for he was wise enough to recognize a tenuous situation when he saw one. Before him were a band of obviously capable adventurers, who had just roughly handled and defeated twice their number. Now he, with a score of soldiers of little more than militia quality, must try to disarm these veteran warriors and spellcasters, and march them off to face a town magistrate. As the man feared, his command was greeted with something other than compliance. "Arrest this lot here, if you will," replied a tall, muscular man with a black eye patch. "But leave honest wayfarers be. We have had quite enough for one day, and I don't think my friends here will take kindly to any official folderol from you and your pups." The officer did his best to hide fear under a stern countenance, and the men with him made aggressive sounds and held their weapons menacingly still. But the captain knew that none of this posturing was having any effect whatsoever. Grumbling and threatening to return with the full weight of Badwall's watch behind him, the fellow herded the cowed ruffians into a bunch and made do with that bag. After sternly ordering the innkeeper to see that the bodies scattered in gory pools around the front of the brass ball were neatly stacked and left undisturbed for official investigation, the captain hustled his prisoners off, leaving Gord and his associates to their own devices. "Put everything together quickly," Curly Greenleaf said with finality. "It is absolutely necessary that we leave here immediately. You have 10 minutes to be ready. If you aren't here then, I leave without you in the appointed time. Understood?" All nodded agreement. "You," the druid added, pointing an accusing finger toward Blanc, "are coming along with us as swordsman and guide." Blanc evidently had no choice. The druid's statement was an order, not a request. The mercenary didn't object, simply nodded and turned on his heel to gather his belongings from the inn. The die was cast. Break. This is the end of chapter 5, page 66. Gonna break right here. The die was cast. The famous Chris has put up the bit. It's the famous quote from Julius Caesar as he's crossing the Rubicon, the final illegal move of moving your troops into Italy, in full regalia. All right, so. Most of this was action, so it's an interesting fight. Again, I would, if you're want to role play or add something to your combat scenes, it is an interesting way of showing these abilities and of adding to your quality of DMing by making fights a little more dramatic sounding than just swinging and hitting and swinging and missing, but to add all this, the ideas, the descriptions to your combat. Now, what do we learn as far as lore for Badwall? We learn that the response time was fairly quick for this band, and this was a pretty sizable group of the Watch, a captain and a score of men. But then the makeup is said to be little more than militia. So we know that Badwall, keeps it's keeping a score of men for some reason there were a score of militia ready at hand, and they came fairly quickly in the melee. They could have been part of the plan. They could have been reinforcements for the attackers, but we really don't know for sure. They definitely are cowed, and I don't get from the context of the writing the feeling that they were part of this ambush that went on against Curly and Geller and Gordon Company. But we do get a little information about the City Watch in Badwall. There's various things. One, we see how Gord is able to do these acrobatic feats by jumping onto the back of a horse. Now, normally, I would say that seems, even for an acrobat thief, that seems highly specialized to be able to jump on a horse, except Gord learned that series of skill while traveling with the Atloy from Saga of Old City.
And he practiced that part.
Yes. So they were more, not like the Renee, they do various things, but they're primarily thieves. And they do fortune telling. They do, some various things as entertainers. The René, the bargeman René. But the Atloy are more entertainer, or at least as much entertainer as thief. And as thievery goes, they tend to be more of a horse thief than the kind that would do, the skilled subterfuge and the distraction thievery. The different kinds of thievery that they would do. The Atloy are actually very careful not to steal too much from the people they know, because they travel in a caravan that follows a kind of circular pattern that goes out from town to town to town in one direction, circles around, and comes back in another, and going back to their original starting point. At least the family group that Gord was dealing with, and it's specifically mentioned there are different family groups of the Atloy. And what they're known as is they do all these highly skilled performances of acrobatics. And because they're so skilled at horse, I assume they do that leaping onto a horse's back. And I would normally say, wow, that's a little overblown, except that is exactly where Gord learned that ability.
Yeah, they were very careful with who they stole from, especially in the small towns. When they got to the larger towns and the festivals, they were a little bit more willing to steal. And when they were teaching Gord acrobatics, he was teaching them subterfuge, because they did pull that one job at that warehouse.
Yeah, and so, so they were an exchange. Gord was a very well-liked, and in fact, when he left them, I believe two of them accompanied Gord, when he left the Atloy, if I'm not misremembered.
Yeah. Some came with him.
Yeah, and went to the Pale.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, in a sense, there's a lot of action here, but not a great deal of lore. All right. And I got to say, here's a comment about the Rome series. Rome is a fantastic series in and of itself, but in what we're doing in creating a fantasy situation, it is full of inspiration for a city campaign, for a military campaign. It really is. I'm a big fan of the first season, and I would say that as much as we get from these Gord books in lore, there's a lot of general inspiration that you can use for a Greyhawk campaign using the Rome series. All right, we're getting 6:50 already. Things have gone pretty quick. And I am going to start a little. Now, we have finished paragraph 5, but we've got enough time to begin chapter 5. We've got enough time to begin chapter 6. So chapter 6 begins as they leave Badwall. So probably the last of our Badwall information right here. All right, it is page number 67, beginning of chapter 6, paragraph 1. They made excellent speed leaving Badwall. Everyone had been ready in less than the 10 minutes Curly Greenleaf had allowed, and the grooms and stable boys had eagerly brought their ready mounts for them, knowing full well that their haste would be well rewarded by the clinking chinkers that filled these patrons' purses. The ostler was likewise eager to see them off, both to avoid any possible future trouble and to collect his own coins. The rotund druid was generous, he knew, and in return for a promise of sending any friends in the same direction of travel as the druid indicated, the half elf had richly rewarded the innkeeper, paying over a handful of copper and silver in addition to those coins that compensated for the service of the inn. Break. Just to let you know, Gord, back in Saga of Old City, paid 4 coppers for a month's stay in the top floor, the whole top floor for Gord and San, in the university district, or, you know, the university area. So it was not like the cheapest area to go. It wasn't a highly wealthy, you know, it wasn't the high quarter and very wealthy in the city of Greyhawk. So 10 of them, and they were saying how coppers here bought what silver bought in Greyhawk, the city of Greyhawk. So to give the silver nobles and more copper, that is a sizable reward, sizable amount of money right there. And, you know, if you do not follow this Greyhawk campaign, the economy is this gold-based economy where gold is worth a fortune in the Greyhawk novels. 10,000 gold pieces, literally enough to bankrupt Count Blamu's, area that he controlled up in the Bone March. It was 10,000 gold is a vast amount of money. Whereas in, you know, even in a regular AD&D campaign, it's nowhere near that. I mean, you know, you have starting money in the hundreds of gold for some characters, and you'd never have that as starting money in this Gygax's novel campaign right here. All right, I'm going to restart. It is page 67, paragraph 2. 11 strong now. The party left the town's walls behind on galloping horses, the last light in the western sky leading them onward. "Will we have pursuit?" Gord inquired. "Not from the minions of the town watch," Geller said wryly, "for they're undoubtedly glad just to be rid of such as we. But of the others I know not, nor do I care to speculate at this time." "I concur," the druid said. "We are the stuff of nightmares now, as far as Badwall is concerned. Someone desires us dead, and they were anxious enough to see this done that they allowed their tools to assault us in the midst of the town, reckless of consequences. The lords of the place will be congratulating themselves on our departure, and not at all eager to follow. Any other troublemakers will be on our heels, and Badwall is left undisturbed once again." "It grows too dark for such a pace," noted the Chakyuk nomad. Coming from a horseman such as Chakotay, this was a warning worth heeding. Agreed, Greenleaf replied, and called for the party adventurers to slacken their reckless pace. We still have much distance to travel this night, and wounds to be seen to ere dawn. Let us go with care for our lives, though, so that when the morrow comes, we may all greet the warm rays of the sun with gladness and good spirits. Regular rest periods were taken, intervals of perhaps an hour, on the hour during the darkness. During these pauses, Curly used his druidical arts of healing to help mend wounds and restore vigor. The half-elf ministered to both men and animals in such good fashion that when the sun did eventually rise again in the east, the entire party was feeling nearly as well as if they had not fought a pitched battle the day before, ridden and all night, and had no real food to eat. Even with their pauses, they had covered some 20 miles, and it was now time for the adventurers to consider what course they must follow in order to assure that they could fulfill their mission without interference from the malign activities of the Scarlet Brotherhood. The party had left the beaten path at first, taking to the fields around Badwall to elude any immediate pursuit. During the course of the night, they had come upon another track, and they had followed this track, for it led in the direction of the Sus Forest, and made their travel easier and quicker by far. When they had come to a tiny cluster of huts at a crossing of paths, they had swung round the little community and pressed on unnoticed, disappearing into the cloaking darkness of the cloudy night. They were now quite near the verge of the dank and foreboding woodland, and no sign of man or his works was visible, save the faint trace of the rutted track they still followed. All right, break. This is page 68. So, really, the bit of lore that I see here is the distance that we're getting. The bit of distance that we are getting from Badwall to the woods. So they've traveled by night and done 20 miles. So it's good that they've added distance rather than just time. So we can just say that Badwall is then, by what seems to be a fairly direct route, around 20 miles from the edge of the Sus Forest, which using the Darlene map is only about two-thirds of a hex. It's commented here that I'm referring to the horse nomads as Jakote, and I'm not sure how they pronounce their J, but it pretty much is the spelling here of the Star Trek Voyager character, and I'm not sure. That struck me, and I'm not sure, if they're mistakenly on Star Trek actually using an Asian or Mongolian name rather than using an American Indian name. So they're at the end here, that the only key thing I think I really spot besides story is that Gygax finally addresses something about horses. In that you really can't gallop a horse constantly. You'll kill it. And what you need to do is you actually, when you're doing distance on a horse, you need to lower its pace, and then you need to get off and lead the horse. And it's just it is a regular thing. You cannot run a horse at a fast pace without that kind of attention. It needs to, and it's very good to see Gygax using that little bit of information to add a dose of realism to the campaign. I always find that when you're adding that, it's a big improvement.
Yeah, especially at night in the forest. You don't want them just galloping all over the place.
Which he has had them done. I mean, right. Back with the Pale, he had those horsemen chasing Gord down on horseback and moving fast in the middle of a forest. And I don't know if he's changed his attitude or learned something. If Gygax, he's from Wisconsin. I'm not sure if he ever rode a real horse, or knew anything about horses. And it's just one of the common things. All right, and Chris is heading off, and honestly, it is 7 o'clock. And I am going to call up Craig, and let me see. Oops. I'm going to call up our recording bot, and this will be the end of recording number 7. Call up Craig and send him.